Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm Denny Griffin, and for the next 45 minutes, I'll be your host on the Juror 13 show. And we're continuing with our series of programming on Children Under Siege. And tonight I have two great guests. First, let me introduce Mark Klass. Mark, after the 1993 kidnap and murder of his 12-year-old daughter, Polly, created the nonprofit Class Kids Foundation to give meaning to Polly's death and create a legacy in her name that will be protective of children for generations to come by pursuing the singular mission of stopping crimes against children. Mr. Klass is now a renowned expert on missing children and the perpetrators who commit crimes against children. Moreover, his foundation is a first-choice resource for law enforcement, with the latest wave of child abductions, murders, and missing children hitting the airwaves and the hearts of so many across the country. Mr. Klass finds himself again working as a tireless advocate for those children under siege. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for that very generous introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, I know you're a busy man. I've seen you. And in fact, I was just watching Nancy Grace a few minutes ago, and I saw you were on her show tonight.
Yeah, I just walked out of the studio, actually, yeah.
Okay, so thank you for being here. And also on the line with us is a Juror 13 member. And what we do with Juror 13 members, we refer to them by their screen names. That you, if you go to the Juror 13 chat room, you will see them and know who you're communicating with. And her name is Precisely. And to shorten that up a little bit, I'm going to call her Pre. And Pre is a lifelong child advocate and a certified foster mother. She adopted one child from the foster care system, but was shocked and dismayed to learn the ins and outs of a system that is designed to protect children, yet seems to weigh heavily toward parental rights instead. It's a system that, in her opinion, discourages prospective foster parents and therefore endangers children who might otherwise be placed in protective environments. Pre, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on with you, Mr. Klass.
Well, thank you, dear.
What we're going to talk about is, I'd like to begin, if I could, Mark. Could you tell us a little bit about your foundation, the Class Kids Foundation, what exactly it is you do and so forth?
Well, sure. The Class Kids Foundation takes a holistic approach to child safety and to stopping crimes against children. In other words, we know that it's not enough to tell your kids not to talk to strangers. We know that it's not enough to pass legislation to keep bad guys in prison or to pass legislation that will provide funding for at-risk kids. We know that it's not enough to have things like Amber Alert so that law enforcement is able to get a quick track on children when they're kidnapped. That it really is going to take an approach by all segments of society, from the family table, kitchen table, to the president's cabinet table, if we're going to address these issues. So we promote a lot of initiatives publicly on television, as I was just doing on the Nancy Grace show, or via our English or Spanish language website, or by legislative testimony, or by doing law enforcement training, or by doing any of a number of initiatives. For instance, this week, in the next couple of days, we're going to be going to New Madrid County in southeastern Missouri to fingerprint and photograph every child in the entire county at the invitation of the county leaders. So there's a wealth of initiatives that we engage in. There are endless things that we can do. And we find out about this issue, the more we find that we're lacking in resources and that there are things that we have to do that haven't yet been done.
Mark, would it be naive of me, I'm afraid it would be, to think that we can ever totally stop crimes against children. There's enough sickos, I fear, out there that you can't totally shut it down. But I think with efforts from folks like you and organizations like yours and whatever we can do as far as Blog Talk Radio hosts and so on, uh-huh. that we could put a real dent in the numbers. Do you agree with that or no?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I absolutely believe that there are numerous things that can be done to mitigate the issue so that children will be safer than they have been in the past. And in fact, Denny, I think that a lot of that, not a lot, but some of that work has already been done in all of the areas that I previously mentioned. You know, when Polly was kidnapped in 1993, we really didn't have a fallback position because law enforcement didn't have protocols for recovering missing children. We didn't have things like the Amber Alert or Megan's Law. We didn't have truth in sentencing in our society. And all of those things have changed in the last 16 years. And as a result of it, we recover children more quickly. We're able to keep the bad boys behind bars for longer periods of time. And we're in better shape now, certainly, than we were then. But that's certainly not to say that there's not an awful long way to go.
Yes, it's unfortunate, but there's a lot of work yet to be done, but you're right. I think there's a good start out there. And educating the public, I think, because I was totally unaware of how bad the situation is. I had heard about certain cases, including Polly's, over the years, but I didn't realize about the child porn. I'm getting a real education doing these programs. Pree, can I turn to you for a minute here now? You are looking more at the prevention side in the form of getting children out of dangerous environments. Am I correct?
That's correct. I mean, what disturbs me the most is now you can go on the Internet and basically do a satellite view of where the pedophiles are, or the sexual predators who live in your neighborhood. And our children are in danger every day. I remember when my son was 6 years old and insisted on, going across to the bus corner on his own. And I figured, all right, if he gets snatched, at least I can get the license plate of the van that took him. It's a difficult situation. Being a foster parent, I can't help wonder if the Haley situation or even Sandra Cantu situation might have been alleviated or prevented if those two had been removed from what seems to be homes that were not ideal.
Let's talk about Haley for a second, Haley Cummings. I got to tell you, when this first broke, the disappearance, it's been several weeks now, over 2 months, I believe, we started hearing reporting and reading about her father and his situation and the biological mother. And when I saw the information on Ronald Cummings and his arrest record and the allegations of drug use and so forth, and Misty, who is now Mrs. Cummings, Misty Crosland, and I thought, geez, if the children were placed with Ronald, what could the biological mother be like or have been like? And would you say from a foster care perspective that this is a situation where perhaps the children should have been not with either parent?
Well, is that a question for me, Denny?
Yes, to begin with,
okay.
Emily Smart.
Well, looking at the Haley case, I mean, there's obviously 6 degrees of separation. We go back and back and back with all these cast of characters that TJ, explained to us last week, the reporter on the case. And I just find that the biological parents' rights are always first. And I have a situation right now where my own foster son, he's adopted now, he has our adopted son, but he has a biological brother who's aging out of the system, and his mother became pregnant again, so she can get services. His older brother has been in and out of the foster care system his entire life as well. So, yes, I do believe that if there had been more oversight or perhaps I mean, the foster care system isn't perfect. Foster parents aren't perfect, but there would be more willing foster parents if the system was run more towards the children's rights approach rather than the biological parents' rights approach. That's my opinion.
Okay, Mark, what do you think about Pree's thoughts on the foster care?
Well, I, you know, she's certainly the expert on foster care, and I don't want to, you know, suggest that I know anything more or less about it because I don't. So I will defer to her judgment on that. The one thing I would say is I think that her analysis of the Cummings family is probably as spot on as one can get. But I've heard nothing that Sandra Cantu's family has been anything but a wonderful family. The first that I've heard of any allegations against them were when she mentioned that just a minute ago, and I'm not quite sure where that information came from.
And that's fair. I had just heard that she was living with grandparents because of difficulties with her own birth parents.
No, she was living with her mother. She was living with her mother.
Okay.
What you're thinking of, I believe what you might be thinking of, is the woman who's charged with committing the crime against her was living with her grandparents.
True.
Sandra was living at home with her family.
I stand corrected, but Melissa Huckabee's daughter I am very concerned about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yes.
Before we move on to something else, I just want to say that if anybody would like to call in with a question or comment for either of our guests, you can reach us at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. Mark, I'm going to be talking tomorrow night with Robin Sachs, an L.A. County sex crimes prosecutor, child sex crimes, and she has a new book out, Predators and Child Molesters, Sex Crimes DA Answers 100 of the Most Asked Questions, and you wrote the foreword for this book. And certainly, in my opinion, and I've read through the book, it's obviously very timely. I mean, you can't turn on or surf the channels and cable TV, and you can't go through talk radio, whether be it internet or over the air talk radio, without landing on a discussion of some crime against a child or a missing child.
Sure.
So I think the book certainly is timely, and it's education, I think, is one of the keys in fighting or trying to reduce the numbers of these incidents. And you wrote the foreword for the book.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on educating the public and books like Robin's and foundations like yours,
sure,
getting the word out to the public to let the public know there is a major problem here, and we can't keep our heads in the sand. It has to be addressed.
That's exactly right. And in fact, Benny, Robin's book is really an excellent publication because it tries to cover this very difficult issue, and it is a very difficult issue, from soup to takes on every aspect of it, from the point where you might suspect that something is going wrong with your child all the way through to the prosecution. So I would encourage anybody that has an interest in this issue that actually has young children to get a copy of it and keep it at home, because I think it would be very useful in the long run for anybody with kids, quite frankly. It's really quite well done, and that is in fact the reason that I offered to write the foreword for it. I think Robin is an insightfully brilliant woman that has a lot of good information in her book, and it's something that I think is an invaluable tool for any young family in America.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Before I take the call, though, I did want to mention something, Mark. I know that a few nights ago, Robin had been scheduled to be on another Blog Talk show, and due to a technical glitch, she couldn't get through. And speaking as a host, I really admire the fact that you rode to the rescue there and called in. And
yeah, Levi Pager's show, yeah. She asked me to do it. She called me up and said, "Oh, I can't get through. Can you help me?" And I said, "What am I going to do, huh?" And Levi's a great guy anyway. Of course I'd do that.
Absolutely.
Danny, before you take the caller, could I ask Mark a question?
Certainly. Go right ahead.
I just saw you, Mark, on Nancy Grace, and you were talking about the Amber Alert system as being somewhat flawed, for lack of a better term. And if you could expand on that a bit, I'd appreciate it, because, of course, you get a lot of time on Nancy Grace.
Sure. I'd be happy to. When the Amber Alert is a pretty simple concept. It was founded, and in fact, it came out of the tragedy of Amber Hagerman, who was a little girl that was kidnapped in front of witnesses in Arlington, Texas in 1996. And the concept was that if a child in your community is kidnapped, local law enforcement can enlist the assistance of local media to deputize, in essence, the public to look for the child that has just been kidnapped and to rescue her and help recover her. But when it became a national policy, it was morphed. It was morphed into something that was much bigger and much more ponderous and cumbersome than that. What they did is they created borders. In other words, you can't issue an Amber Alert in another state until you get the express permission of the Amber Alert coordinator in that state. So they've taken it out of the hands of local law enforcement and put it into the hands of a newly created state bureaucracy. And they've also created criteria that ultimately aren't realistic because they don't apply to so many of the cases that they should be applied for. And the examples that I used in Nancy Grace, I don't have that paper in front of me now, but it was Adam Walsh, it was my daughter Polly, it was Elizabeth Smart, it was Daniel Van Damme, it was Megan Kanka. It was many of the cases of children, it was Jessica Lunsford, many of the cases of the children whose hearts, who America has let their hearts go out to, and who have in fact inspired so much of the legislation that we've mentioned earlier. And I think, given the fact that a little boy in Southern California named Brian Rodriguez was just kidnapped by two armed men, who tied up his family and said they were going to take him to Mexico and kill him, that this occurred and an Amber Alert was not activated, basically is the last straw for me. I think that we have to totally revamp this policy, and we need to do whatever is necessary to make sure that the Amber Alert covers all of the children that are taken by predators, whether you've got the license plate number of the predator car or not.
I think you said it was 9 hours before they actually issued the Amber Alert
on
Bryant.
On this particular case, it was 9 hours before they issued the Amber Alert in Bryant. And I have another question. I guess my question is simply this. If the Amber Alert is activated only when you have vehicle information, why is the Amber Alert activated on television where people are sitting in front of their television sets?
Yes. Yes, it was very disturbing to hear that little clip, and because I didn't know about that, and I think we need to all do some more. Is there any legislation, or is there any site, or anywhere that the average person can go to?
Well, that's why I didn't have a call to action, because I just have been thinking about this since yesterday, and I'm not quite sure what the answer is. Certainly believe that we can tear down these borders pretty easily, and one doesn't need legislation for that. Now, I live in California on the west coast, west of the Mississippi, where we have huge states. But on the east coast, that becomes really problematic, where you could fit a half a dozen states into Southern California alone. If you're going to stop an Amber Alert at every border, then you're going to create an awful lot of problems for an awful lot of children, and I dare say that that's already occurred. So, Pri, that's something I have to look into a little bit more and figure out exactly what that call to action is, and what it is we need to do as a society to correct the mistakes that were made when this policy was created by people who didn't know what they were doing in the year 2001 and 2002.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I'm sure that your 13 membership would be the first ones to act on whatever you decide is the appropriate call to action.
Good. Thank you very much. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a caller on the line from area code 813. If you're there, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I don't know if you've heard about the tragedy that occurred in Tampa, Florida this morning, but the story is boyfriend and girlfriend got into an argument. Boyfriend took girlfriend's three-month-old child, who was not his biological child, and initially he hurt the child by throwing him down on the concrete, and then he kidnapped him and driving down the freeway threw him out of threw him out of the door onto the interstate. Now, I have a couple of questions about this. First off, when did it become okay to target children when adults are angry at one another? And the second thing is, this mother, she was 17 years old, but supposedly she had taken out a restraining order against this man before. She was supposed to go to court yesterday and didn't show up, and this morning the baby is dead, tortured, thrown out onto the interstate. So I'd really like to hear from both of you about when these people decided that it was okay to target children. And then if I have any other questions, I'll just ask as you go along. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it never been acceptable to do that to other people's children. Unfortunately, we see through history that children, being the most vulnerable people in our society, become the easiest targets and the easiest way for cowards to act out their evil intent. I hope, as best I can, addresses the first part of your question. And I think that even there's a code among thieves, that people like that, that harm children, that when they get into the prison system, they are treated very differently from your garden variety of criminal. They're treated as the pariahs that they truly are, because there's even a code of honor among thieves that you don't go after children. These are the worst and most cowardly individuals in our society. And I quite frankly forget the second part of the question. I'm sorry.
I'd like to hear about mothers who allow such people to be around their children in the first place. She had an opportunity to keep him away, yet there he was, and now her baby is dead.
Well, a restraining order is only a court order. It's not an electronic leash. It's an order that you impose upon a bad guy and ask him to voluntarily comply with. And I think that's probably a pretty bad system to begin with. One could argue that individuals like that, with that kind of an intent, and it would create an environment where somebody would have to go to court to stop them from doing something, is probably somebody that belongs in jail or in prison to begin with. But the other side of that argument, which you'll hear from the ACLU and every other prison apologist organization or criminal apologist organization in America, is that, well, gee, you can't lock everybody up. The inmates will be controlling the asylum.
Yes, and well, in my case, what I learned, my son was abused, and we didn't get him under our wing until he was two. He weighed 19 pounds. He was failure to thrive, and the first thing he did when he came in my house was eat the cat food. And I have medical records going back to when he was born, and he had been beaten and abused. Until the powers that be can document that enough to remove the child, it's unfortunate. Something has to happen before the child can be protected.
Well, in the case of what happened this morning, as you were talking about earlier, the Amber Alert, even though they knew the situation, the Amber Alert wasn't sent out, but by then they had found the body of the baby. So, but it was 3:00 in the morning. If it had gone out right away, perhaps someone could have seen them on the interstate. But I don't, you know, once he did what he did, I think that was it for that child. But the other ones, the Sandra Cantu and Kaylee Anthony, Sandra was it was not a stranger abduction. It was somebody who she trusted. But in Kaylee Anthony's case, it's a family member, and I just don't understand why children are being targeted now. So I'll just hang up and let someone else have a chance. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Mark, there was a question in the chat room earlier for you wanting to know if you could give advice with just one red flag warning sign that children may be in danger. Do you have any specific red flag that's more important than others, or a warning sign that people should look out for to indicate their children could be in danger?
I don't know one thing over another, but I think if your children's behavior changes radically for no apparent reason, that's probably very much a red light that there's something going on to disrupt their lives in a negative way.
Okay. Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hello?
Hello, you're on. Go
Hi.
Ahead.
Hi. This is Dr. Jan.
Denny, I'm going to go through a tunnel in a minute here, and I might lose you, and if I do, I'll call right back.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on. Go ahead.
This is Dr. Jan. I'm commenting on the problem with these restraining orders is the women don't follow through. I have seen it in when I was a police officer. The guy will come back and say, honey, I'm sorry. I'll buy you this, I'll buy you that, I promise I'll never do it again, and they take that for the word. And the reason that these parents are using these children is they're using them as pawns and to be vindictive against the other parents.
Yep.
I have seen it in my practice over and over again. If I can't have them, then you can't have them. And that's how they do. Or I'm not going to pay child support, I'm not going to see my money go, so I'm going to take care of it this way. I've seen it over and over again. I don't care how many restraining orders you get, you have to follow through. You cannot let them back in your lives, and that's the problem.
Well, I would certainly agree with that. We're seeing it now, too, unfortunately, with the financial and the economic crisis. People are taking out their whole families because they're in financial trouble.
But I have seen it in divorces where the parents get so vindictive against each other, they use these children as pawns. And I've seen it, and that's when it comes to when they get so aggravated because the mother's trying to bleed these husbands dry, per se, that they'll wind up, they kill them.
Yes, that happens, and having been a child of divorce myself, and now I have to bring in another personal aspect of my life, but I had my own parents, two lawyers, both calling me, asking me to testify against the other. I was 13 years old.
Yeah.
So, it is a tough spot, and what you see must be horrible, but you, as a mandated reporter, Dr. J, have to, too, I'm sure, with these children, make a call of when DIFAS or Department of Children's Services or whatever it's called in your state are brought in, and how you make that call.
Right, and even if I make the call, the problem is by the time I make the call and of the suspected abuse, somehow, some way, it gets written as it non-founded, and then they're back together for an hour.
Just one second. I think we have Mark back on the line. Let me just verify. Mark, is that you?
Sure is.
Okay. I don't know if you've heard the conversation, any of it. The caller raised an issue that with these restraining orders, orders of protection and so on,
yes.
That in many cases the women who normally are the ones that receive the order don't stick with it. They don't follow through. The other party will play nice, buy some presents, what have you, and they will then allow the individual back into their life, back into their house with access to their children. Do you find that to be true?
Oh, I know it's true. No, she's absolutely correct. They come crawling back. They come crawling back with flowers in hand, and the incidents escalate and escalate and escalate until ultimately something horrible happens. And that's what women's shelters are for. That's what domestic abuse hotlines are for, to try to break the cycles of abuse and give these women and their young kids an opportunity to put some quality back in their life. It's a huge, huge problem in our society. There's no question about it.
And I was also saying, Mark, that it's also that in these vicious divorce that the children become pawns, and the fathers will say, well, I'm not going to pay child support. You know, you're bleeding me dry. And it gets so vile with these parents that it comes down to killing the children.
Yes. Yes. And I concur with everything that you say. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'll sit on the sideline. If there's anywhere else, I'll call back.
Thank you very much for the call. And let me jump right to another caller here. Area code 724, you're on the line with us. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. I just have some comments to make whenever it comes to prevention from abuse orders. And it very much concerns me because a lot of times, and my having been in that situation myself before, and my mother was an advocate for the victims of abuse for over 15 years. And let me tell you something about these men, and they don't care about these pieces of paper. There was an incident several miles away from my home years ago, and the order did go through, and the husband had gone in and actually talked to the wife, convinced her to meet him at a McDonald's to discuss the facts about their children. He shot her dead right in McDonald's. And so it doesn't, you know, these pieces of paper and preventions from abuse doesn't always stand as to what they're supposed to do, because a piece of paper isn't going to stop a man from doing what he wants to do. If they're out for blood, that's where they're going. And, you know, the system needs to realize that it's not, you know, it's the paper itself, and it doesn't mean anything. There needs to be harsher laws against whenever a man is violating his family. He definitely needs to be reprimanded in some other way besides a piece of paper, okay? Because women are terrified to go into these courts and sign these papers, you know, and go through these proceedings because they get even more threats. My own husband, myself, that I've been through and have done this, all right, I wouldn't dare. I would not dare walk into a court system and ask for that because I know that he can work in the night, and that's just the way it is, okay? So I'd just like to vent out a little bit, and mothers do need to realize they have to do whatever they can at all costs to protect their children and not go out and kill them, okay? This whole Kaylee Anthony and Casey Anthony thing, you know, that's just way out there. And my heart goes out to the rest of the families. And, Mr. Kloss, I really admire you and what you have been doing. And right along with Mr. Walsh and everyone, okay? You people really deserve a lot. You really do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Denny, I had a question, too, for Mark about the Joshua Childers, I think his name is, the one
yes,
in the jury now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I believe they said it's been 72 hours now that he's been missing. He's a little boy that just wandered out of his house. There was no foul play. What's your experience there with his chances now of being found alive, safe, and et cetera?
Sure. Well, the statistics that I talk about whenever I'm talking about the missing cases usually have to do with children that have been kidnapped and are murdered as a result of a kidnapping. I think with the Joshua Childers case, you're dealing with a whole different set of circumstances because nobody's indicated that the little boy has been kidnapped at all. Everything seems to point to the fact that the little fellow wandered off when his mom wasn't looking for a minute, and that certainly should not be an indictment of the mom because we know that we can't keep our kids on a leash. The good news is that the law enforcement and the community has responded in almost unprecedented ways in this situation. There are literally thousands of people that are chomping at the bit to get out and look for this little boy. Now, one of the things that is good news in this case is this is very near the area where Sean Hornbeck disappeared about 5 or 6 years ago now, and his family that runs a missing persons nonprofit search and rescue center is motivated to go out and do anything they can to help find this little boy, and they do know that area very, very well. I do know from having spoken to Sean's mother earlier today that she will be making the trek to his home tomorrow to help in any way that she can, whether it's offering professional assistance with the search and rescue or offering more personal assistance with the family by trying to console or counsel the family of another missing child.
Yes, and I didn't mean to imply in any way that this was a...
I know you didn't, but I just want to make sure that everybody understands that up front, that there's no implication that the family has done anything wrong at all.
But that said, if it is in that Sean Hornbeck area, you know, if he did, I mean, I believe he's in the woods and he's probably hunkered down and crying and sleeping and just trying to get by. But hopefully nobody has come across him that doesn't have good intentions.
Yeah, let's absolutely hope that. This little boy needs our prayers, I think.
Yes.
Mark, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I've seen this throughout my life, and it's an unfortunate situation of, I guess, just the human failings. You could see it after the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks, after the Katrina hurricane and so forth, is that there are people out there who will try to capitalize on any situation for their own benefit.
Yeah.
And it's, for example, people who, especially with children involved and so forth, and want to do something, they want to try to help, will donate their money or time or both to organizations or people who are on their side. Obviously, your foundation, the Class Kids Foundation, could donate in good conscience. Tim Miller with EquiSearch would be possibly another organization. But have you found that in this area of trying to protect children, or at least under the guise of trying to protect or help children, that there are some maybe less than reputable organizations or people who are or have tried to feather their own nest?
Sure, to exploit the situation, sure. I understand that there's a group that's been working with Kaylee Anthony's family. I don't even want to say a name because I'll probably get it wrong and malign a really good organization, but I understand that there is a group working with them who fit into that category. They've been around for a few years. The director has got a felony rap sheet. They've never actually done anything but go out and raise money. What we try to do, though, Denny, is we try to pursue our agenda as opposed to collecting dirt on other people's agendas. So I would probably suggest that the best way that one can find out about a nonprofit organization that one is considering making a donation to would be to go to two locations. Go to the IRS website and look up the nonprofit organization's 990 forms so you can see what kind of money comes in and make a judgment on what kind of money goes out, and then be able to make that judgment on whether or not they're acting responsibly, and see what kind of bang is being brought back for the buck. And the other one would be to log on to GuideStar.com, and I think they offer a comparable service that will let you analyze the earning and spending capacity of America's nonprofit organizations.
Excellent. So, listeners, if you know if your heart's in the right place and you want to do something to help in the form of a donation, just take a few minutes and do the research, as Mark suggested, and make sure you're giving your hard-earned money to an organization that deserves it and is going to put it to good use and not just...
Well, yeah, Denny. I mean, write a check for Class Kids. Good Lord.
Absolutely.
I mean, listen, donations are down. I mean, and I'm not complaining. I mean, it's the way it is in our country this year. You know, this is a very difficult time for everybody. There's no question about that at all. We've all seen our 401ks disappear. We've seen our properties be devalued in ways that we never thought possible. And, you know, that kind of activity hits the nonprofit world as well. We're way down on our donations, and as are others, I'm sure, and that impacts the way that we're able to do business. But we continue to do it.
Well, I have to, yeah.
I think crime is going to go up against children because of the financial conditions. I just think it's...
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, overall crime is going to go up, and the frustration is taken out on the kids.
Yeah, I agree.
And for anybody who hasn't visited the website, it's www.class, that's K-L-A-A-S, kids, one word, classkids.org. And there's a wealth of information on the website, and you can also donate there if you choose to. But you'll keep up to date on a lot of things, legislation, child safety, missing children, community outreach. So I highly recommend that you visit the Class Kids website and browse through it. And you can learn an awful lot. There's a newsletter available. And again, you can donate to the foundation if you're so inclined. So please do that. And you can help yourself out and hopefully help the foundation out and help the children out. So I think it's really a worthwhile stop for you.
By the way, Denny, anything that's .org is a not-for-profit rather than .com. So that's one hint for the average person that they're at a not-for-profit location.
Good point. And I hate to hog the show here, but I can't help myself. Another question. Mark, different parents, when their children are missing or are found murdered or that type of thing, react differently, and that's certainly understandable. We're all individuals, and we all react to different problems in our own way. But a couple of things I'd like to ask you about is, first of all, let's take the Cummings case. Now, we don't know what happened to Haley. All we know is she's gone. There have been reports recently that the police and others feel strongly that she's still alive, which would be absolutely great, you know, if she is. But how would you rate the performance of the conduct of the parents here, the Ronald Cummings and also the biological mother and now the stepmother, Misty? What do you think of how they've conducted themselves?
Well, you know, I think that Ron Cummings' initial response and reaction was everything that you would expect, and I think the same goes for the bio mom, Misty. No, that's the other one. Crystal Shepherd, I think her name is, and Misty as well, I guess. Although, as far as I know, none of them have been cleared. I think that they've brought a little bit too much of their personal lives into this case and distracted people from the goal, which is finding Haley. And I wish that they would stop that conduct and get back to the real issue, which is finding the little girl. Because, you know, we don't like to hear allegations from one person against another person against another person. It demeans them as individuals, and it distracts from the ultimate goal of finding out what happened.
Okay, and let me, one more case I want to ask you about.
Sure.
Conduct, and that this wouldn't be parents, it would be grandparents. It would be, of course, George and Cindy Anthony.
Oh, well. Yeah.
That's a whole other show.
I think that they're not doing anybody any favors by speaking out at any level. I think this is a lost case. I think that you stick into, you know what, it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, and it walks like a duck. and pretty obviously you've got a duck, and I think that Casey Anthony is a duck, and her parents are doing everything they can to make her look like something that she isn't. And I think that effort to do that has backfired hugely, and it's just a matter of time before this woman goes to trial and receives her just desserts, which in my opinion would be a sentence of death.
Well, I think you're in the majority there with the opinions that I hear.
Yeah.
I don't know where the time went to, but we just ran out, and I would like to thank my two guests, Mark Klass and Pree, for being with me tonight. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, both of you.
Well, thank you for having me on your wonderful show. I appreciate it. I appreciate speaking with you as well, Pri. You're a wealth of information.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. And, Mark, maybe you'll join us again sometime in the future. You're certainly welcome any time that you have the time.
Of course I will.
Okay. Thank you very much. And, Pri, thank you. And tomorrow night, if you can tune in, you listeners, we're going to have Robin Sachs on, and we'll continue to talk about crimes against children. Thank you very much, and have a great evening, everybody.